Okay.
Recording a podcast.
That's what we've been doing for 7 years. Holy shit. What's up? This is Movies On Up. You can't run from yourself. I also can't run from my co-host, Mr. Dave Bacella.
I'm right there.
Because he's right there, and there's so much equipment. Like, I can't really even stand up very well, so he'd absolutely catch me.
That's so, like, me getting up is like,
and there's just nowhere to run out here. Where the hell am I going to go?
Go to the counter.
That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. You can't run from yourself is true, and it's also our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guest on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guest to us @moviesonup on the Twitter if you are correct. And if we choose you, you won't be able to run from a Movies On Up prize package, as I'm sure the mail carrier is quicker than you are. That's kind of their job anyway. This week, our job is to bring you our top five favorite Nicole Kidman movies. Bombshell comes out in the theater this week. And
explodes into theaters.
You might even say it explodes into theaters. As we mentioned last week, we have done a Charlize Theron episode already. We've actually already done a John Lithgow episode. So we were kind of working our way through this cast accidentally. Margot Robbie, we probably have a lot of crossover. That filmography just isn't quite as robust as someone like Nicole Kidman, who we've been talking about trying to do a Nicole Kidman episode since Dave and I both watched Destroyer. I think it was at the beginning of this year by the time we finally caught up with it.
It was one that at the end of last year we really wanted to see, but we didn't because it was never around stupidly. Here. Yeah. I remember the day it went up on Hulu, I messaged, Destroyer's on Hulu. Worth it.
Yes.
Like I watched it the day I saw it was there.
That was one that would have been high on our list for our favorite movies of 2018 had we been able to see it before we recorded that episode. So Nicole Kidman's been on our mind for a while. This is not the first movie she was in this year.
We did a Destroyer episode when The Goldfinch came out.
I want to say we've tried to manufacture two Nicole Kidman episodes. We wanted to talk about Destroyer because we both liked it so much. Didn't know when the next opportunity we'd get to do that was. I guess it would have been now had we not already done Destroyer. So it made a lot of sense. It was something we wanted to do. Spoiler alert, we're going to talk about Destroyer again today because we both like it.
Check back in about 20 minutes probably.
Yeah, it is safe to say that it is one of our collective five favorite Nicole Kidman movies. Somebody that's been around a long time, not necessarily someone that I feel like I have strong opinions on one way or the other. Usually going into these episodes, I think I either like the person and maybe I'm right, maybe I'm not, or I don't think I like them and I can be proven that I do.
She's one that I think I've always underappreciated.
Probably fair.
She never detracts me from a movie. It's never like, oh, Nicole Kidman's in that, I don't want to see that. But never.
Oh, this is Nicole Kidman movie.
Oh,
I gotta go see it.
Nicole Kidman and George Clooney. Okay, but then when you look at it and you look more closely at it, it's like I really like the movies that I have, and you know I have five also ran. There's lists we've done where I've had pretty much
a fifth movie that you hadn't seen.
yes. So I mean, there's lists where I'm lucky to get five, let alone also ran. Essentially, I could do a top 10. Nicole Kidman, and I mean, that's leaving off some that I think are watchable. She's one of those that I never considered, like, oh, I love Nicole Kidman, but I've never been anti-Nicole Kidman, but when she's good, she's really, really good, and that's kind of what this list reminded me of, is that when she's, like, on top, she's fantastic.
Just looking at my list, these are all movies I've talked about before, which doesn't mean that I've only seen five Nicole Kidman movies. I think what it means is I really like these movies. They're not just on here because, ah, shit, I got to pick five that have Nicole Kidman in it. No, they're movies I've liked so much, I put them on other lists.
See, there's three that I almost guarantee I have never talked about on this podcast ever. And one that I've maybe mentioned in passing that I really want to gush about. And then Destroyer, yeah.
I'm going to go on a limb and say it isn't your number five, but I am dying to know what is your fifth favorite Nicole Kidman movie.
So when I was like four or five, maybe like getting into six, there was one thing in life that I wanted. I wanted to start a gang because of BMX Bandits from 1983, directed by Brian Trenchard Smith, starring David Argue, John Lay, and Nicole Kidman. My brother loved this movie because my brother rode his bike everywhere. He was a lot older than me. I wanted to ride my bike everywhere because of this movie, and I wanted to start a gang, but I couldn't ride a bike yet, and I remember
That is the barrier to entry to most gang
activity. I took up
activity.
Yo-yo, and I thought, like, oh, I'll just start a yo-yo gang. and I had dreams in the backyard of starting my dope yo-yo gang where we do crimes and save people. Like, we were this cool...
It's a real dichotomy.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing crimes and saving people.
Yeah, yeah. It was like a Robin Hood gang.
The anti-hero.
Yeah, but then I got my bike with the big yellow spokes, and it's like, I can finally start a gang, and I got a paper route instead. So I never did get to join a gang, even though BMX Bandits...
There's still time.
Not a gang. They're just three people on bikes that came across some walkie-talkies. It's one of those that if I were to watch now... probably doesn't hold up, but I haven't seen it since I was probably 6 or 7, and my memories of this movie are so strong because it drove... I mean, I wanted to start a yo-yo gang just because I didn't have a bike. That's how strong this movie was on me, is that I was looking for new skills just to be able to start a gang with. So it might be the first movie that I've ever mentioned on this podcast that gave me gang aspirations.
It would not be the last, however.
Yeah, we'll see. I really liked it. And the plot was silly. It's just two kids and the girl, they get mixed up with some bad people because they found something. It's a cool plot. I'll remake it someday with me as star.
As one of the BMXers?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Hey, guys, let's start a gang.
End of scene one. My number five, ever since I was about 14 or 15, I wanted to start an orgy. And it just so happens to be because of my number five Nicole Kidman movie. And it is from Stanley Kubrick, Eyes Wide Shut, from 1999, starring Nicole Kidman and Mr. Nicole Kidman as well. There are a handful of directors I give quite a bit of run to on this show. Hitchcock, Tarantino, those guys I'm quite vocal about. Kubrick is right up there. This could very easily have developed into a softcore or even worse movie had someone with a lesser talent than Stanley Kubrick been involved. Tinto Brass and the folks from Hustler did Caligula in 1979, 20 years before this. And that is, you argue, it's not even a softcore porn. That's what an orgy movie can be if you're going after. And that fucking had Helen Mirren in it. And still, it went into lots of dicks, lots of actual sex, if that's what you're into. Kubrick's orgy movie could have been just as explicit. And despite dying just days after finishing the final cut of the movie, I believe his intention was to show an honest and adult relationship. Kidman's Alice is very forthright in her desire to seek intimacy outside of her marriage. Maybe that was a harbinger of things to come within that marriage, who's to say? Maybe that's why she was so good in this movie, because she really got it. This takes Cruise's Bill by surprise. And seemingly, as if dared to, he goes on a brief intimacy journey himself. While there's plenty of boobs and butts, this is not about sex. It's about how individuals consider sex within the bounds of a committed relationship or relationships in general. It's really well done. Like I said, Kubrick is very high. In my opinion, I do tend to enjoy his movies. I wish this wasn't the last one. I feel like it's people just write it off. That
well,
it's
it was built
movie.
Up so much. It seemed like this movie took years to make.
It
like,
took years and years. It was one of the longest production cycles.
Because
in
I remember,
movie
I mean,
history.
For it to be, what was this, 97?
98. Sorry.
So, like, this is right when I'm starting to, shortly after, which we'll get into.
Right when we started the podcast.
Seems like it. This is when I was really paying attention to movie news and read the magazines and stuff. And I just remember this movie for so long. And I was a big Clockwork Orange guy. And then it just seemed like a weird comparison is another movie that was like an icon's last performance before they died that just seemed to take forever to come out. And then it did. And just people just didn't like it. Was Island of Dr. Moreau with Brando. That movie and this movie are always going to be intertwined to me because I just remember them being like these long roads of hell to get released. And then they came out and people are just like, oh, we waited for that. My number four, it used to be you'd have to go through, like, you know, you had Jennifer Lawrence doing that house movie. Elizabeth Olsen did that other house movie. In like the late 90s, early aughts, it was like horror movies. In the like 80s and 90s, it was not so much horror, but more thriller. They had to be like the wife in distress, or the even Julia Roberts had Sleeping with the Enemy. Like, they had to do a movie like that. Nicole Kidman did hers in 1989 as Sam Neill's wife in Dead Calm, directed by Philip Noyce. It's a cool movie. Something goes wrong, dead kid. Sam Neill and Nicole Kidman decide to go out and be alone on a boat. And then Billy Zane shows up randomly in the middle of nowhere. It's basically Cape Fear, but on a boat. Boat Fear. Like, it's just a random dude shows up and you can't trust him. And this is Billy Zane.
At his zaniest?
This is Billy Zane around the time. Oh, he was a big enough star. They wanted him to star in Dirty Dancing. He was the next big thing. It was before Billy Zane was who Billy Zane is now. And I mean, there was potential there. He's a really good creep. Like, he's really, really good in this movie because he has that aura about him to where it's like, he's kind of charming. But then once it turns, it's like, oh God, no, he's a creep. It's a Nicole Kidman Survivor Girl movie. She's fighting off Billy Zane in a boat. Or you're going to talk about confined spaces. You're aboard a boat. It's a really competent thriller. And I mean, like, I'd say 85 to like mid to late 90s was really good for these kind of movies. When they come out now, they almost seem like a dime a dozen or just throwaway movies. But I kind of have memories of this and that Madeline Stowe one and Sleeping with the Enemy. Like, a bunch of really good thrillers came out around that time. And Dead Calm is one of them.
I think the takeaway here is if you're on a boat with Billy Zane, something bad is going to happen. You need to get your ass off that boat just as quickly as you can. You mentioned the house movies. So my number four is actually Nicole Kidman's house movie from 2001, directed by Alejandro Amenábar. It is The Others, starring Kidman and The Others, Fiona Flanagan and Christopher Eccleston. A while back, we did our favorite haunted house movies. This one was on my list. And almost 20 years later, I will admit that this is a bit formulaic, but that's with the benefit of hindsight. At the time, this story wasn't quite as predictable. It has a good atmosphere about it, which goes a long way in my book. You may have heard that from time to time on this show. It is a really solid ghost story, and Nicole Kidman does her best to pull things through. Maybe it's nostalgia. Maybe it's low expectations for a PG-13 horror movie, which I am still guilty of to this day. But I think this one delivers. Amenábar displayed some ability that I don't think he's ever been able to duplicate since The Others. And Kidman doesn't pay her bills with ghost stories or with horror movies, but I respect the commitment here. In 2001, I don't think we were a movie-going audience that was expecting twists all the time or were too wary about taking things at face value. I mean, spoiler alert on a 20-year-old movie, there's a twist in it that you probably will see coming now because you've seen 20 years of M. Night Shyamalan movies. You get it. But again, at the time, this was a pretty fun ghost story. She's a ghost, by the way.
Our haunted house episode was one of my favorites because I came in thinking like, oh, I'm extra sneaky. No way you're going to think of Beetlejuice is a haunted house movie. And it's my number one. So like, I'm excited to defend it. And it was also your number one.
I love Beetlejuice.
I know. But
if Nicole Kidman was in Beetlejuice, it'd be on this list too.
I didn't
too.
Think you would think of it as I remember being so sneaky. Like, oh, he's going to argue it's not a haunted house movie and I get to defend it. It's going to be
fun. I have
fun.
No idea. I don't know what the argument would be that it's not.
Yeah, that's true.
Are there ghosts in that house?
I just don't think when you think of haunted house movies, I don't think that it comes up right away because it's a ghost movie. But
yeah,
anyways, she's not in that, so we'll move on. My number three, I mean, I said that these are movies that I haven't mentioned before, and I don't think I've mentioned BMX Bandits or Dead Calm prior to this episode.
Two for two.
This one I have. It came to mind when we watched a movie that we really, really liked a couple of years ago, Nightcrawler, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't think we did a Nightcrawler episode, but I remember talking about it, and I brought up 1995's To Die For, starring Gus Van Sant. This is about the time. Like, I'm around 14 or 15. I'm starting to read movie magazines. Like, movies are more than just something I go do on Friday nights now. Like, movies are something that I knew I had fallen in love with. And I remember this being one of the first times where I watched and just thought, like, that's a goddamn movie star. This is one of the first times that I just remember being blown away by a performance. Not so much by the movie. The movie's fine. It's Gus Van Sant. He's great. Her performance in this movie is great. And even now, like if you were to watch it now, To Die For, it might be a little dated. She wants to be a newscaster. She starts making a documentary about teenagers, but she's not everything she seems to be. And she'll do anything to get where she wants to be. It's a phenomenal performance from her. And I might have brought it up in the Destroyer episode because she has given me performances before that, like,
I think we did
blew me away.
List about
favorite TV newscasters.
Yep.
Yeah, so I probably raved about it then, too. So, yeah. And that might have been when Nightcrawler came out, actually. I know. Maybe. I remember, yeah.
I remember doing that list because it's a pretty specific thing.
Yeah, which usually doesn't come out all right.
No, we just do that. We should have just done that list again for this week.
Yeah, we could have. And it'd still be To Die For. That would have been up high on my list as well. But it's Gus Van Sant. It's Nicole Kidman. It's a really, really good movie that I think was ahead of its time. If it came out maybe 4 or 5 years later, when the found footage craze started to hit, the MTV like reality show craze started kind
of
hit.
That's a lot of it too.
Like I feel like if it would have come out around then, I feel like it would have made a much more cultural impact instead of just being a really good movie from 1995.
My number three stars journalists, but not television journalists. They are print journalists in Lee Daniels, The Paperboy from 2012, starring Matthew McConaughey, Kidman, John Cusack, and Zac Efron. And by 2012, Kidman had already won her Oscar. McConaughey was on the trail, not there yet. He's making his move. And Cusack, never been nominated. But those three together is a hell of a cast. And as good as they all are, I think Efron does more than hold his ground here. At this point, I would back him for an Oscar before Cusack. Along with Oyelowo, Daniel's crew not holding anything back. And The High School Musical kid, I think, absolutely does more than just tread water here, pun completely intended. I know that this is a Nicole Kidman list, and realistically, she's fine. This is much more McConaughey, Efron, even Cusack, who's not in the movie a lot, but makes an impact when he is. And she's fine as this femme fatale. But to me, it was a coming out party for Efron, and an early sign that McConaughey was going to fuck around and get himself an Academy Award, which he did about a year and a half later. I like this movie. I thought it was really well done. I think when people go and look at Lee Daniels' career, this one doesn't really come up. And I can understand he's got better movies, but I think somehow it's just undervalued because I don't know if it's not what people expected from Lee Daniels at the time. It's got some really good performances from people you may not, especially in 2012, you may not have expected them from.
I just looked it up. Our TV episode from years ago, it was in May when Late Night or whatever, when that Mindy Kaling movie came out. So yeah. So not too far away. And To Die For, not in my top five.
Oh,
wow.
It
was also ran. But I did get to talk about UHF. So good times. My number two, it's another one of those that sometimes I'll catch a movie late. And if I woke up from a coma.
Such as Destroyer.
If I woke up from a coma and you showed me this movie, I would think, oh, that probably got a lot of Oscar noms in 2015. This is one of those. Molly's Game is one of those that I watched. And it's
Widows.
Like, oh, yeah, Widows. Like, those are movies where it's like you watch, it's like, oh, there's a lot here for Oscar people. Nobody cared when Billy Ray wrote and directed Secret in Their Eyes in 2015. Julia Roberts, Nicole Kidman, and Chiwetel Ejiofor. Chiwetel is one of my favorite actors, has been for a long time. Nicole Kidman, I've always liked. Julia Roberts is one of the best. But then you have Dean Norris, Alfred Molina, Joe Cole, Michael Kelly. You have this great supporting cast. It's about FBI agents. One of their daughters is murdered, and it's just kind of what happens after that. It's an awesome movie. Like, the scene when they discover Julia Roberts' daughter, I think, is so well done. And then you watch her and it's like, okay, I remember there was like a 15-year span where Julia Roberts was considered the greatest actress. She wasn't just Pretty Woman. She was doing Aaron Brockovich and like doing all these movies. She wasn't just a pretty face. All of that came rushing back when she's in that dumpster with her daughter. And it's like, she is one of the greatest actresses ever. Chiwetel, he carries the movie because it goes a lot of places, but he's kind of there the whole time. it's a good Nicole Kidman performance, but it's one of those where Julia Roberts is, she's a damn movie star. And maybe not now, I don't think people think of her like that, but I don't think those people saw Secret in their eyes. It's a remake of a, I don't know, Mexican movie or something, El Secretos de Sus Ojos. So whatever that's from, it's a remake. Leads up to a really, really interesting ending. It's kind of a mystery throughout. It leads up to one of the more compelling endings that you get in this kind of movie. It's a lot different than you expect, and I think it came out really, really good.
I'm kind of blown away that the movie is already 4 years old. It doesn't seem like it is.
Spoiler alert, we're doing our best of the decade in January.
Uh-oh.
And
a preview?
Well, that's just...
A secret in your ears here?
No, this isn't on there, but like that's a lot of it. Some of it's like, man, that movie's 5 years old already. And then some of it's like, that movie's only 7 years old. It's so nuts because movies that I would swear were not this decade are like 2015. But then movies that seem like they were like last year are like 2012. So that look for that in January.
Time is a flat circle or whatever nonsense McConaughey says in True Detective. I don't know, but it sounds applicable. My number two, as much as my number three is maybe not Nicole Kidman's finest hour. She's fine. She does a good job of what her character's asked to do. She's really good in Anthony Mangella's Cold Mountain from 2003, starring Jude Law and Renee Zellweger. They were both nominated for an Oscar. Zellweger won. Really, there's a ton of great performances here. Not a lot of them have the screen time. Brendan Gleeson's really good in this. Philip Seymour Hoffman, which isn't going to surprise anybody. Natalie Portman also shows up in a small role, which she's really good in. It is a doomed love story wrapped up in Civil War dressing. Kidman's Ada provides the inspiration for Inman to try and make the trek back to North Carolina. And in a movie filled with some really determined folks and some real underdogs, it would be easy for her character to get kind of lost. We don't spend a ton of time with her throughout the movie. And I think there are characters or maybe situations that are a bit more memorable, or the characters are more charismatic for what they're going through at the time. Natalie Portman's one that kind of comes to mind there. And while things certainly don't go swimmingly for Ada, somebody's always got it worse. I'm looking at you, Sarah. So she tends to get lost as this, she's an ideal that he's trying to get back to. She's less an actual living, breathing person and more just that ideal. But she still gives a good performance. It's very well shot, wonderfully acted by an excellent cast. And you look confused as fuck.
Because I'm looking at my number one and the awards nominated for it and realizing that it got nothing at the Oscars. Like, not even a nomination. I was surprised it even got a Golden Globe. I don't remember it getting a Golden Globe, but I don't really pay attention to the Golden Globes. My number one, we've kind of teased.
I think we could just go ahead and say our number one.
Yeah, we've teased it. We've did a whole episode on it. We've mentioned it any chance we could get this episode or any time. It's Destroyer from just late last year. Neither of us saw it until this year.
About a year ago.
It came out like late. Like it would have been on both of our top 10 of the year if had we seen it. We hadn't. We won't put it on this year because it was from last year. But
we could go the filth route with it.
Yeah.
She was filthy in it.
That'll come up. It's Destroyer. It's Karen Kusama, who we've also done an episode on The Invitation, which I love. It is one of my favorite movies of the decade. Spoiler alert. Destroyer, it's so well directed by Kusama. It's Nicole Kidman, who's been this great actress for 30 years. I think her best performance, to be that good for so long and then still have this kind of performance left.
She is a four-time Academy Award nominee, and she's got a trophy. And this movie is our co-number one, one that she was not nominated in, let alone won. Which, the one she won for, not on my list.
It's not even an also-ran for you. What she went for, the piano or the pianist or something like that? Yeah,
I don't think that's accurate.
No, she won the same year Adrian Brody did, The Hours.
Yes, I believe
that's
accurate.
They both wore fake noses. Or no, she wore a fake
nose.
Adrian Brody had a real
nose. Yeah. Yes.
He won for the pianist, and she won for The Hours.
She won
the same
year.
You know, she's two characters, essentially. She's this up-and-coming FBI agent with all sorts of promise who's dedicated to her job. And then she's this worn-down FBI agent who had a lot of promise but that saw some shit. She's badass. She's in the younger like version. She's, you'd look at her and it's like, that's a movie star. She's gorgeous. Like, it's so hard. I try not to judge actresses like that. When you see her, she is this special goddess. And juxtapose that with her older version in this, where she's just as like powerful and more intense as an actress. It really is one of my favorite, not just Nicole Kidman, it is my favorite Nicole Kidman performance. It's one of my favorite performances from actor, actress ever in a long time. If you ask me, like, what are the best performances I've seen in the past few years or even the past decade or so, it's going to be hard. There might be a couple that come to mind, but this one's going to be up there.
I think unfairly, if an actor or actress is attractive, whenever we see them in a role, oh, this is just whomever, fill in the blank, playing a character. But what Kidman was able to do in this, and it's not just like, oh, well, she just was wearing makeup so you couldn't recognize her. Some of that's true, but she's able to just create this character to where you're not thinking Nicole Kidman, you're thinking Detective Bell.
Yeah.
That's all there is.
Very similar to what got Charlize Theron an Oscar.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention that.
I mean, they're different because, characters, but right. Like, it's this goddess-like figure that's ugged herself and yes. Really became this character.
And I think that's it. Monster specifically, people are like, oh, well, Charlize Theron just got ugly and won an Academy Award for it for being ugly, which is not true.
No, she's
like,
really good in that
yes,
movie.
Yes, right. But people get stuck on maybe the gimmick of taking a really attractive actress and making her be ugly for this role as if she should not have had the opportunity to play Eileen Wuornos because she's attractive. Like, that's fucked up. She was great in that movie. Nicole Kidman's great in this. Could Detective Bell have just been attractive? I don't think so.
No, and I mean,
but does that mean that an attractive actress can't also be talented enough to pull this off?
And that's what made it work. She brought those balls to the performance to where, yes, she is this gorgeous 20-something. I brought up that scene when it's like her, and he's like, oh, she's the right one. Because she has this depth. She's not just this pretty face, but she'll lure you in with it and then kick your ass. It's such a good movie. Kasama is, between this and The Invitation, like, it's hard to find, off the top of my head, to find a director that's made two movies in the past handful of years that I like this much. It would be kind of hard to find, but it's just so well done all around. And I mean, I don't want to gush about it too much because
we've done that already.
Yeah, and I'm going to get you the date on that. If you do want to hear us talk about Destroyer for a whole episode, it's just from a few months ago. September 13th, we did our Destroyer episode. So if you want to hear us gush more about it, check that episode out. If you haven't seen it, I believe it's still on Hulu. Definitely see it if you have not.
It's worth it. You said you had quite a few also-rans.
My Life, I made it. It was on my Michael Keaton list. She's the wife in that. The Peacemaker, which was a 90s action thriller with her and Clooney. A 90s action thriller with her and Sean Pidd was The Interpreter. That's the one that was actually filmed in the United Nations building. Boy Erased from last year, that Joel Edgerton movie, really good. And then Strangerland, an Australian movie. It was one of her smaller, like, Australia. I think Joe Fiennes was in that.
The only one I had, and I didn't do a ton of also-rans because I really like my five. And there's kind of a chasm between those five and between Eyes Wide Shut and The Killing of the Sacred Deer, which is really my only also-ran.
Yeah.
That I like Yorgos a lot. I don't love that movie. I thought The Lobster was really good, and I'll defend
like
that.
Lobster. I didn't like Killing of
No, but she's really good in it.
She is.
So, like, that
Everybody is.
Yes, that's very true. That movie could have made the list, not based on how much I liked it, but she was good.
Yeah, that kid's playing Yorick in the Why the Last Man series, which he wasn't my Yorick. I wanted Dylan Minnette, but I think he'll do all right. But next week, one of our favorite episodes of the year, it is the, shockingly,
yeah,
again, 7th annual Uppies Awards, where we just try to talk about movies. Usually we try to talk about movies that we may not talk about the rest of the year, but I think this year there's still a lot that will come up later or has come up already. But that's next week. That's the Uppies, and then we go into our run of going into next year. We're gonna do
the Star Wars
last
episode
Skywalker there, episode, yeah, or the Rise of Skywalker episode, our favorites 2019, and then our two-parter favorites of the decade in January. So that's what you got coming up for the next 5 weeks or so. But until then,
keep it up.